10 marriage issues. Now, so before we begin, I'd like to ask you, you've all heard the saying opposites attract? Anybody? Yes? No? All right, good. Excellent. Barbara, what was it about Nate? Was there any opposites that he was so different that it just really attracted you to him? Different than your personality? Okay. All right. How about you, Jocelyn, with Kenny? He could sing. Lynette, what was different about me? Well, be careful now.
You were very outgoing and assured of yourself.
I was cocky. So let me ask you, so that we're different. We were definitely different. And we're still different in that way. The question is, has that issue, that difference, ever been a problem between us? And it's okay to say yes if it has been.
Because you drag me along to places, social situations I don't want to be in.
Here's the point. It's interesting because our differences, oftentimes it's those differences that attract us. You're so different from me. We understand the physical looks part, but just in personality that, you know, it's attractive to us because it's like our alter ego, right? But as we get into a marriage, sometimes those alter ego issues become the main issues in a marriage. Those things that we look at, those our differences oftentimes become what actually separates us from one another. If you go out and do research, an internet search, you will find not only funny things, but you'll find a variety of top 10 lists. And I took one and I put it in here. It may not be your top 10, it may not, you know, but I thought it was had the relevant things I wanted to talk about. So I'm going to give you I'm going to talk about all 10. I'm going to shorten up the first 6, and then I'm going to focus in on the last 4. But before I do that, thank you for replying to the text. Here are some of the answers to the question, what do you think the most pressing issue in a marriage is? Technology and cell phones, time, no commitment, you can divorce at any time, unrealistic expectations, and money. And multiple people said money. And so I think you'll find that a lot of that corresponds directly with what we're going to talk about. So in no particular order except for the last 4, all right? The first thing that I want to share is changing ambitions. And I thought about this, and, you know, as you think about marriage, most of the time when couples decide that they're going to get married, they've probably talked about some of their, you know, do you want to have children? Where do you want to live? How close to mom and dad do you want to live, right? But over time, it changes. What job do you have? I mean, imagine if your spouse came home all of a sudden one day and says, we're moving to Alaska. Why are we moving to Alaska? Well, because I'm going to get a job there. You know, changing ambitions, changing without communication, right? The issue between spouses is that if one or the other or both parties change their minds and come up with a new plan, it has a dramatic impact on the other person. Life-changing decisions are monumental. I came home one day and I had a new van. And my wife says, we can't afford that. Take it back. I was like, no, we need it. We have a growing family. You know, it costs. Now, that's maybe not as dramatic as this, as, you know, moving. I came home one day and said, we're moving to Oregon. And she's like, finally, I can get out of California. Right? So, I mean, the thing is, you have to be very careful. You need to talk about, if you're going to make big life decision changes, you really need to communicate that and sit down and talk to your spouse about that. They can certainly drive a wedge if you... Overstepping boundaries. As I mentioned, oftentimes those differences. So women, I promise you this, growing up, and especially if men lived their own, they didn't put the toilet seat down when they lived on their own. Right? And now what we're trying, you ever heard somebody say, oh, they were so such and such a way, but now I have changed, trained them. Right? I've heard that once or twice. I've trained them. Right? Here's the thing. Naturally, our differences separate us or make us, you know, differences are attracted, but sometimes then we tend to want to try to change them, and we can overstep our boundaries. It's not uncommon for one spouse to try to change their partner. Could be fashion sense. My wife didn't like my Argyle socks, right? And that's a silly one. I understand that. But, if we try to change them to my, if I try to change my wife to my perceived vision of what she needs to be, that's going to put a lot of strain on our marriage, right? We, even though we're one, we still have some individualism about ourselves. And that's not a bad thing. We need to be very careful that we don't overstep boundaries to change our spouse. We definitely don't want to take our mate for granted. When we stop, when we think about the idea of appreciation in marriage, right? Brownie points. How many of you men have a whole bank of brownie points you're just waiting to cash in? Right? Here's the thing. I don't do things to earn brownie points. I don't do things so that my wife will reciprocate. And if that's my expectation, I'm going to begin to take her for granted. She's going to begin to take me for granted. We have to be very careful that we do the things that we do for. Why does God give us grace? Because we've earned it? No, because He loves us. Well, that's true, but think about it. All of the, when we talk about patience and we talk about mercy, all of those things He gives us are done out of love for us. And when we do things for our spouse, it should be done out of love and not out of a sense of, it's deserved, right? We want to be careful that we still do those small loving gestures for our spouses. Now, here's the thing. Be smart about it. So interesting dynamics. How many women like to get flowers? Okay. You notice my wife didn't raise her hand. She's told me a long time. I used to buy her flowers for everything. And I wanted to do it. I loved her. I wanted to show that because everybody else was doing it, right? But also because I wanted to do it. How many of you like to get jewelry? Notice my wife didn't raise her hand there. I've got a problem right now. I can't buy her flowers and I can't buy her jewelry. And every time Valentine's Day comes around, I feel deeply depressed and pressured because I don't know what to do. Chocolate. Oh, well, that's true, Barbara. She would do chocolate and I'd do truffles. So, but you see, the point is that I don't want to take her for granted. And that's part of my psyche is that sometimes I think that I'm not showing her that respect and that concern because I'm not doing that. But there are other ways for me to do things. We don't want to stop doing those little things, right? Anger, this boy, as we see in our culture, men tend to go from zero to infinity really quick with anger. Women tend to simmer and simmer and simmer and simmer. We're going to see the anger expressing ourselves, how we express ourselves. Let me just say this. It's normal to get angry. If you've never been angry with your spouse, raise your hand. No one did. Good. That's right. We all get angry, and it's normal for us to get angry. But it's important that when we do get angry that we act appropriately. And Brother Jeff is going to share in the next session some of the ways, how do we fight fair, right? This is pointing out the problems. And by the way, let me take a step back and say, when our love and our respect is out of kilter, it's usually manifested in one of these. And I think that's important to understand. If you're experiencing any of these in your marriage, most likely you have a love or a respect that is not in balance with one another. All right, number six is selfishness. And, there's a couple ways the selfishness manifests itself. If one spouse acts selfishly and consistently places their needs above the others, right, ahead of their spouses, then it's only a matter of time before they're going to really have conflict. It can manifest itself in a very passive way, but it can also manifest itself in a very outward way. When one spouse becomes very controlling, they're manipulative, they're jealous, and we have to be very careful about, you know, selfishness. It's I know there are a lot of books out there, his needs, her needs, things like that, and we need to be understand that our spouse has needs, and when we only put on, so give you a perfect example of this. I love the Dodgers. Now, don't boo. I know some of you might not be Dodger fans. I know. It's all right. My wife doesn't really care about baseball. You know, the Dodgers aren't on TV a lot, and we live in Oregon, so they're not going to be on. They play the Mariners or the Giants or national TV, right? So, but once in a while, they are. So my wife is very gracious about letting me watch the Dodgers play baseball. Now, to reciprocate, I decided that I was going to watch Hallmark movies with her. And we started watching Hallmark movies. I got to tell you, I like them now. They're not the best quality, but you know what? It's good to watch a movie where you're not going to have to worry about all the other things that are coming into it. Now, I'll still go watch Avengers. I get, you know, but you see, what's interesting is that even though I like Hallmark, I'm not confident that she really still likes baseball, but she's still patient and unselfish in allowing me. That's just one little example of how we can bring, you know, how we deal with selfishness by sharing and compromising and sharing that interest. All right, moving on. Technology and friends. That was on our list, right? Technology and cell phones. This is when Brother Jeff asked me to do this section, I went out and I started doing some research, just looking up a bunch of stuff. And here's the most startling statistic that I read that I want to share with you. We spend 47 hours a week on technology, whether it be a computer or an iPad or Samsung or cell phones. We have no offense to anybody if you do it, but we have a zombie generation now walking around like this. 47 hours a week, almost 2 full days out of 7 on technology. We spend 7 minutes a day talking to our spouse. And we wonder why there are issues. Technology has come to control our lives. Now, technology is a good thing. I will tell you, as a pastor, my sermon preparation is a lot easier today. Right? Because of technology. Now, I still have a Bible. I still have my reference books. I was teasing my wife because I have an office full of books. And she's like, you should pare down. And I said, no, go look at Jeff's. He's got an office full of books as well. Point is, though, technology is a good thing. Brother Jeff and I make our living in technology, right? It's a good thing. But when technology controls our lives, when technology begins to take over, when technology begins to become the substitute for a meaningful relationship. Guys, you realize that technology allows people today to have interactive, intimate relationships. That's where our society is going with technology. It's a very sad thing. Technology leads to all kinds of issues. You know, let's talk about some of the other issues. Technology leads to the last four issues. So in the last, when we talk about the last four issues, part of the lead into that is the technology. If I can communicate everything via electronic, why would I ever need to talk to somebody in person, right? So think about that, communication skills. If I use technology, and that's not, again, technology is not a bad thing, right? But what technology has, I think, done for us is it's dumbed us down in how we communicate with one another, right? We communicate in emojis now and memes and, you know, GIFs, right? That's how we communicate. So if you want to say, that was really funny, you type LOL, right? And if you want to say, that's really silly, you might go on your phone and send a... And they're funny, and yes, but we've lost that ability to effectively communicate with our spouses. And I believe that as we look at this, one of the things, remember, 7 minutes, by the way, Jeff said that women want to say 10,000 words a day and men 1,000. I've heard that as well. The other statistic that I heard is that women need an hour of stimulation, meaningful conversation a day to really feel relevant in a relationship. Now think about that. An hour. True story. When I was working, my wife was awesome stay-at-home mom, taking care of our kids. I was a salesman for a living. For the most of my adult career, I've sold communication equipment, right? So anyway, so what do I do all day? I'm on the phone. I'm in front of customers. I'm making presentations. I'm talk. When I come home, I want to go, no more talking. What do I do as a pastor? I get up and I preach. I talk. The opposite was I'd come home and my wife has been going googly, googly, googly all day. She's been dealing with kids. She's been talking to children. She wants to have a meaningful conversation with an adult. She's like, can we just please have an adult conversation? Right? Opposites. I have to realize that she needs to have that meaningful conversation. She had to realize that. We worked it out. We had that space for me to unwind. And then we were able to have time for those meaningful conversations. I like what Jeff said. I've done that, by the way. What? Right? I'm in my box. I'm thinking. We just realized that we have to communicate. We know that there in James 3:13 it says, who is a wise man and endureth with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness and wisdom. The Bible talks about communication. And I think it's important that we realize that all of the anger and selfishness and technology and all of those things that we've talked about, we've identified up above, they will impact our ability to communicate effectively. We need to make time and I had it in my notes here, and you said it, we need to make time. We need to schedule time to have meaningful conversation with each other. We need to take the cell phones and set them aside. We need to take the computers and the television and everything else and turn them off and have meaningful conversation. Even if it's, as Jeff pointed out, even if it's just 5 minutes, it will grow. And you will be able to have those conversations. We find that, another thing I'll say about communication is that we need to remember that a large part of communication is listening. Right? Listening. As I shared when we did our breakout, oftentimes Lynette will come to me and she'll say, I've got a problem. I'm like, oh, what is it? Because what am I thinking in my mind? Fix it. I'm going to fix this. Doesn't matter what it is. I think I can fix anything, right? I can fix it. And what I've found is that oftentimes that she wants to express, she wants to communicate a problem. She just needs me to be a good listener. And that's part of the effective communication is learning how to be a good listener. All right. Any guys have any comments on that? I mean, I don't want this to feel like a sermon, but I think it's important. We need to recognize that communication is in the top four of problems within marriage, but oftentimes it's a manifestation of other surface issues that drives down, because I think good communication proceeds out of the heart, right? All right, so family, top four issues in marriage, family, children, parents, in-laws, right? So I won't dwell too much on this only because the younger group expressed and shared with us that children aren't not necessarily that they're bad, but prioritizing, how do we be good parents, give time to our children, as well as, you know, giving time to ourselves, right? We talked about parents. One of the pieces of advice that I'm not sure that I shared, but in the older group said, you know, move away from your parents, right? Why is that? Undue influence from parents. Look, I love my mom and dad, and I was thankful that I had godly parents who raised me in church. But when I went from a family unit to my individual family unit, and now I have to make a life with my wife. And I shared yesterday that, you know, and besides, my mom never took my side anyway. You know, I call her up and she say, whatever you did, just go apologize and make up with your wife because you're wrong. Point is that we can allow parents to have undue, and there was some things that were shared in our group about, you know, the pressure that we feel from parents. We joked about the cooking one, right? We talked about that. Don't compare your cooking with your wife's and your mother's cooking, right? But the same is true as I read the story where this woman, she came home and she said, honey, the shower needs to be fixed. It's leaking. And the husband says, okay, I'll get to it. And this went on and on and on. And finally she's like, why aren't you fixing this? And he says, well, because I'm not sure how. And in her mind, her dad could fix everything. And so she just assumed that her husband could as well. And so we have to be very careful that we don't compare our spouses to our parents and then go to our parents when they're not living up to that expectation, right? And then there's the dreaded in-laws. And I thought about this, and by the way, I had two sets of in-laws. My wife's parents divorced, and they both remarried, and so I had two sets of in-laws. So I had I'm not going to say it. They were fine. I got along very, very well with both sets of in-laws. But how many of you have ever seen that show, Married with Children? Right? That's the wrong show. What's the show with Ray Romano? Everybody Loves Raymond. Yes. Yes. Thank you. And the whole dynamic of that show is Raymond and his wife live next door across the street from Ray's mom. And it's really the interaction between the mom and the daughter and the issues there, right? I mean, that's a Hollywood interpretation of it, but yet it's really true. I mean, as a spouse, you're never sure what the in-laws, why is that? Because, you know, sometimes mom and dad have a certain expectation for their wife, for their daughter, in what kind of husband it is. And sometimes parents, you know, mom and dad thinks that their husband, their son, you know, they have certain expectations for what their son's wife should be. Point is whether it, both sides, right? We have to be very, very careful and cautious that we don't allow children, parents, or in-laws, the interference from in-laws, to influence our marriage. Because at the end of the day, it really is about you and your spouse. Have a good relationship with your parents. Parents are important, right? Parents are a part of our extended support system. Just like our church family is part of our extended support system. But they should not be the primary source because your spouse is that primary source. All right, intimacy. I told you yesterday, I'm a little bit shy about this one. Why is it? Because that's the way I was raised. You didn't talk about it. But sex, right? Intimacy. Here's the thing. Most people don't have a problem with intimacy before they have a problem somewhere else in their marriage. If I'm angry with my wife, if I'm being selfish, if I am being hurtful in any way, it's going to manifest itself here. If everything else is right in my life, this is probably not a problem. But here's the interesting thing about intimacy, especially for men. And to a certain extent, women. if I'm feeling deficient in a lot of other areas and it's impacting intimacy, oftentimes that emotional, that physical connection is going to manifest itself first in the intimacy way. Does that make sense? Affairs happen because there's a lot of other problems in your marriage, but the primary need, the libido of a man, is they want to express themselves in an intimate way. And so oftentimes when we start having issues here in our marriage, that's the first place we go to seek it out outside of our marriage. And that's really where we have to be very, very careful, is that we're not seeking this out outside of our marriage. All right, so we know that there is a vicious cycle when it comes to sex, right? It's very hard to have that intimate relationship when we feel emotionally detached, but it's really hard to feel emotionally attached without physical intimacy. And we get into the cycle. And we, as couples, when we get into these issues, we need to identify what the problem areas are. And we need to address them. And I know that, as I said, Brother Jeff's going to talk about some of that. And we're going to ask you to rate some of these here on the next project. But the thing that I wanted to share with this, and as I said it yesterday, this is part of God's plan. And it's nothing wrong with thinking that intimacy is fun, right? It is fun. It's enjoyable. It's pleasurable. Understand, though, as was stated earlier, you know, men can go from zero to ready very quickly. Women are different. Women are, they want that emotional attachment. They want that emotional interaction, I should say. And so we have to understand the differences there as well. All right, number one, money. I was really not surprised when I got the list back and money was one of the number one, was mentioned by more people. And when couples bond, it's common for their bank accounts to fall suit. I'm very thankful we only have one checking account. And my wife manages it for me. I haven't seen a check in years. Not even from the church. It goes right to her, gets deposited. But here's the thing. I know how much money I have. I ask her, and I can go into my accounts. What I will say is that oftentimes, though, is if we're not communicating about, you know, our financial situation, if we're not talking about it, if we're not aware of it, I've seen this manifested itself a lot. I know some couples that run separate checking accounts. She works, he works. They split their bills in half, and they each pay part of their bills. Is that right or wrong? I think personally it's not probably the best way to handle it, because we're one unit, and you're still kind of functioning separate. Best example, best story about money I can share with you is when we were first married, we were living in Arizona. And I, as a man, wanted to buy my wife a china cabinet. I grew up in a house, my parents were antique dealers, my grandparents. In my mind, my wife needed a china cabinet, right? So there was an auction in town, and I said, can we go to this auction? And my parents were in town, and I said, Dad will help me pick one out. It's an antique auction. Can I buy you a china cabinet? And she goes, sure. She said, but you can only spend this amount of money. And I said, okay. So we went to the auction, and I spent $50 more than she told me I could. I got her a beautiful china cabinet. It's still in my house today. She didn't talk to me for 3 weeks. True story. Why is that? $50? 3 weeks. Why is that? Well, because we had agreed on how much I was allowed to spend, and I completely disregarded her feelings. And that's how these things manifest. So we can really get ourselves in a lot of trouble. My advice is to discuss finances with your spouse. Talk to them. Sit down, budget. She came to me one day, and we weren't in debt. We were doing fine. I had a car payment and a house payment. That's pretty much all I had. And she came to me and she says, I bought this book. I'd like to know if you'd be willing to read it. And I said, sure. What is it? And it was a book by Dave Ramsey. Anybody know Dave Ramsey? Excellent book, right? I don't agree with every principle he has in there, but I understood what she was saying to me. She was saying to me, we need to probably plan a little bit better. And that was probably 10, 12 years ago that she said that. Not that we were having financial problems, but I understood that really what was at the root of that was security. My wife wanted security. And I've learned over the last several years, you know, at one point I had life insurance, and I oftentimes thought life insurance was to help, you know, if something happened to me for my wife when the kids were home. But I also recognize now as I get older that life insurance was not just to pay the bills, but was to give her a security in case something happened to me so that she wouldn't have to be financially, burdened if I were to die. Just understanding the thought process between a man and a woman when it comes to money, right? And we find that if we do that, to avoid these issues, as I said, we need to be on the same page. I would encourage you to sit down and make a budget. I would encourage you to understand exactly how much money you have coming into your household accounts. And then ensure that you go in and make plans and make those plans together and hold yourself accountable to those plans. Otherwise, if you're spending money or your spouse is spending money, it really can manifest itself and in very negative, negative ways. All right. So those are my top 10. You may rank them differently. What I'd like for you to do is under project number 3, I would like for you to, on page 33, I would like for you to rank them 1 through 10. And 1 is going to be, 1 is the most severe issue, and 10 being the least severe, right? And as Jeff said earlier, focus on the top 3, right? Here's the thing about, you may think that, you know what, we have anger and selfishness and intimacy issues in my marriage. All right, those are your top 3. If that's what it is, I don't know. You can't fix all of them at the same time. What I want you to do is rank them 1 through 10, and then over here in column number 2, I want you to rank them 1 through 5, with 5 being so. You may say that intimacy or family is your number 1 issue, right? And you're going to rank it as a 5. That's the most severe. Or you may say family is number 1, but it's really only a 2 because, frankly, our marriage is doing really, really well. Whatever you identify, and regardless of the severity, what we hope is that, remember, as Jeff said yesterday, if you've ranked your marriage as a whole as a 5, we want to help you move it to a 6. And the way that we do that, the way we start to move that needle is to start to identify the issues. And as we identify these issues, we'll take those and focus on one. Focus on one problem, work on that problem. That will help you. And that by working on that one problem, it may help you to solve other issues as well. Go ahead and fill out project number 3. We don't want you to share it yet. Jeff's going to talk about some things in his presentation that will allow you to essentially share them later on. So don't try to resolve them or fix them. That's right.